on this one. So my big question, and this is something I'm still yet to figure out, so I'm after a bit of a favour here, some guidance and advice on how I can make this actually better. So I've got loads and loads of content, okay? I mean, like loads of content. So webinars, things like this, podcasts, interviews, masterclasses, little kind of anecdote, Neil's musings, kind of a load of stuff. I just don't get enough time during the day to be able to make the most of it. Now, I know the philosophy, the main rule is that if you create a piece of content, then you need to multi-purpose it. So if it's that long, so, you know, 10 minutes, for example, you should be able to get a number of different clips out of that one piece of content. You should be able to get some memes out of it. You should be able to get some quotes. You should be able to produce imagery. You might want to, I don't know, take the narrative of a particular part of it and then have that as a written blog, etc., etc., etc. I just don't have enough time to devote to doing it, and I know it's the right thing to do, and I know what to do. How can I create more time? How can I prioritize this over and above all the other things I need to do in the day? That's the question.
I have an answer, but it's less time priority and more about resource. So you do everything yourself, don't you? So you work full time and then you content it privately. I used to work for, before I got this role, I was, it was work experience, basically. I helped a content creator with his content. So he was repurposing his content from TikTok to YouTube, and he had time to do the TikTok and film them live, but never had the time to faff around, cut it down, and put it on YouTube. So he ended up getting a few assistants and a few people who wanted to be involved in that sort of thing and were happy to do it, say, free of charge. And it wasn't that he was looking for unpaid labor, because he tried to find ways to pay everyone in the end, but some people didn't want pay and they were just quite happy to do it. For me, it was a couple of minutes of my time a day, and it was just something to talk about in interviews. So that's an option. And then another one would be realistic goal setting. So how often do you need your content to drop? How many platforms are you looking at? Because he was trying to do too much too quickly. So the TikTok had blown up really, really quickly. So he was looking at 250,000 followers almost overnight. And that wasn't the goal. It was meant to be 100,000 by the end of the year. And then he 2.5 that. So maybe just look at your defined goal setting and think, what do you reasonably have time for as a one-man band, or look for extra resource support.
There we go. In a nutshell, this, honestly, the value of these drop-ins, normally it's kind of the other way around. This is so, so good. Thank you for that, Daniel. That's really interesting. It is something that's kind of been on my radar to kind of create a bit of additional resource, you know, over and beyond me. And I think, you know, maybe that is just, it's so logical and obvious, isn't it? You kind of miss it and then you move on and you still kind of battle with the day-to-day trying to do it. But I think that's, genius thought.
And what he did was he utilized community. So he's a law influencer, which I didn't know was a real thing until I met him. And then he created a community of people. These were like-minded people that were struggling to navigate law or had mental health challenges when they worked or studied towards law. So then he used it's not Slack, but it's something that's very similar to Slack, like a social media thing, where he had a community and they used to speak to each other. And because people liked being a part of their community, they would help him and like spread his message, share the word and offer support. I know I'm making it sound like a semi-cult, but actually it was a lot nicer than a cult, and that people just, you know, needed that support from each other. And then in return, they were helping him spread his message, spread his word, saving him the effort. So it was a lot of natural growth because he gave people that space. So for you, you promote marketing learning, you lots of different things. You have an audience already. We are your audience. So lean on us more. You do us enough favors, so why not return it?
Yeah, it's a lovely thought. And I knew this was going to be the right thing to record, just because I think a lot of people can kind of take their own kind of spin on what we're talking about here. And that's always the really useful thing about this. So, yeah, really, really interesting thoughts there. Yeah. Emily, any kind of observations? Obviously, you consume content, you know, and you are one of my, as Danny would say, you know, you're one of my target audiences as well, obviously. Any kind of thoughts or kind of observations in terms of, you know, types of content that are useful? I mean, Daniel obviously talks there about kind of prioritizing not only, you know, the content, but also the channels. I mean, the kind of things that I talk about, and you know what those kinds of things would be. Are there obvious places for you where that would more naturally be easy to consume? Are there kind of certain networks, social networks that you think, well, actually that would be the best place really to kind of get this kind of content through as a consumer of the content? Any kind of thoughts?
I think LinkedIn is quite a good one. Yeah, I don't know really.
Do you follow, Emily, Pretty Little Marketer?
No, I don't know.
So Pretty Little Marketer is a girl on her own. I think her name might be Sophie. And I think it initially was the name of her freelance company. But then what she did was she's created like a bit of a, again, almost like a safe space community for, I think it was intended at female marketers, but actually the content is relevant to male people as well. But like the way she presents it and the conversation she has and the topics she chooses are aimed at female marketers. I follow a lot of it because she shares all her resources on LinkedIn, but somehow she's managed to find a professional audience via Instagram. So I think what's happening is a lot of the people that she's targeting at, maybe it was 18 to 30, probably use Instagram anyway. And the first thing you do is if you find someone or something interesting, you look for the link to the other profile. So that's what she did. So Neil, do you have like a distinct brand that people can follow, or is it everything under your name, Neil?
It's all me. I am the brand. Yes. I mean, I've got a marketing business, but I tend to sort of have that as the support function that I then kind of use to do delivery with clients and stuff. But no, I am the brand. The brand is me.
Yeah. So maybe like not work on that, but expand on it. So like, you know, I know what Neil is. I know who a Neil is, but does that translate? Whereas with, say, something like Pretty Little Marketer, she's essentially doing the same thing as you, but because she has the word marketer in her name, she's going to be easily searched for.
Yeah, it's interesting because for me, when you described that, I was thinking about Linktree and the way I use Linktree to kind of combine together all of the various kind of touch points that you could have, you know, with me, and you only need the one link, which is Linktree. So it's almost like there is the tree kind of all the different options. So if it was Instagram you want to find me on rather than LinkedIn, which I agree, and it's absolutely my core, that is, you know, where I live most of the time in terms of content promotion. But of course then that links back to my website, so any kind of posts or any kind of videos or podcasts or whatever that I do tend to then link back from LinkedIn into my website, so that kind of becomes the hub of things. But I think you're absolutely right there, Daniel, in terms of the, yeah, that kind of flow of stuff. It needs to flow very, very obviously, be instantly found, needs to flow very obviously to a destination. I think for me as well, the kind of my podcast, which is by far and away the biggest growth thing that I do in terms of new kind of new audience and can you hear that seagull making an absolute racket?
Yeah,
above my head. Yeah. No, it's a seagull that's going to, yeah, it'd be dangerous, I think, right above my head. Anyway, that's a whole different story. But certainly, yeah, so the podcast is a really, really interesting one. And that, I guess, is where I'm kind of sort of almost answering my own question that, you know, anything I do that's video-based, obviously there's an audio channel there that gets spun off straight away instantly to create a new podcast. So there's a very nice kind of simple, seamless kind of duplication there for the podcast audience. And it feels like there's actually two different audiences, the ones who are consuming one style of content in, for example, LinkedIn, and then my podcast audience, which is very, very different, and much more international as well. I've got a big following from the US actually on my podcast, whereas actually my kind of LinkedIn profile is predominantly kind of UK, Europe, and Middle East, whereas you know, the podcast itself is, you know, half of the podcast followers and listeners there are West Coast US. So yeah, it's kind of really interesting. And just building on your point, Emily, of the kind of, yeah, you've got to kind of know where the heartland is. You really, you've got to know where the obvious link would be. And I think for most of the content, and I think for most of us as well, LinkedIn is a very, very good place right now because it's less crowded. There isn't so much going on, whereas places like Instagram, it's very, very noisy. It's very hard to get traction with organic content unless you brought them there through some other means. So yeah, maybe we're finding the route through this here.
And you know, you're trying to create more time.
Mm.
More time will start to create itself, because if you are persistent with your posting, etc., naturally you're going to start to pick up an audience. As you pick up more of an audience and the target audience is there and you know you've got people to please as such, like your audience, to deliver, you'll have to make time naturally. And also you'll reprioritize and restructure, because if something's picking up, you know that's where you need to place the effort. So even if you have, I don't know, 1 week and three, you could always hash out a load of content in that week and then just dice it up and into smaller chunks and take advantage of like posting in advance, that sort of stuff. But I think naturally it sounds like all your foundations are there and it will piece itself together.
Yeah, and I think it's really good advice, because yeah, we can often get, you know, sort of literally on a treadmill of production, and then you beat yourself up because you didn't get a live out this week, or you know, you didn't do quite enough stuff, that you kind of feel that you're almost becoming subservient to it rather than it being part of what you do. You kind of feel like you're a slave to it, and I think it doesn't feel good that way. And I'm sure everybody else listening to this on Catch Up will probably be feeling the same. Is like sometimes you just feel, oh, I didn't get a chance to do it this week, and then you beat yourself up because you didn't do it. It's like, does it really matter, to be honest? And I think you're absolutely right, Danny, that, you know, prioritizing the channels where they're important, getting some extra resource to kind of help you repurpose the stuff that you've got, I think that's a really, really good idea. And I think we can all do that, you know, particularly if we work in brands and stuff, people are often looking for that work experience, aren't they? So yeah, really, really good advice. I knew it was worth recording this. See, there we go. Always